Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the show. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben.
And I didn't say we're Car Stuff. I don't know why I didn't do that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're still Car Stuff here with our super producer, Noel Crash Brown.
Crash, I like it.
Yeah, we're piloting some nicknames, and you can let us know what you think would be a great nickname for our producer later. But this is part two of a very exciting topic for us.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to talk about our favorite movie car chase scenes again, because the first time we ran out of time. I mean, there's just so many of these out there. And honestly, Ben, I think I'm going to end up having to abandon a few of these that I've already written plenty of notes for. Mm-hmm. But we've just got so many to cover.
Likewise. So let's hop right in. Let's go ahead and do just a couple other honorable mentions, because there's some stuff you and I had talked about when we were setting this up where we said, okay, well, what's the line? There's so many chase scenes in so many films. So are we going to do a lot of science fiction? I know there are going to be a bunch of people writing in saying, why did you guys not cover Matrix Reloaded?
Yeah.
Which has a great chase scene. It really is a great chase scene. However, so much of that chase scene is also just people fighting.
True.
You know what I mean? And it's, I hope I'm not bursting anybody's bubble here, but that's not that's science fiction. It's not a documentary.
No.
It didn't actually happen. we are aware of that one. And I thought it was a great chase scene. But what about a movie that in its own way is entirely a chase scene?
What's that?
Vanishing Point.
Vanishing Point. Yes, I do remember that
from 71, right?
Is that with a Challenger?
Yeah, yeah, spot on, Scott. It's the white Dodge Challenger. So yeah. Iconic. This guy is, the hero of it is named Kowalski, ex-cop, Vietnam vet, and, he has a bet to drive from Denver to San Francisco in 15 hours.
From Denver to San Francisco? Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Is that one physically possible?
In the film, he does some speed or something to keep him.
He's got to stay awake.
He's got to stay up to speed.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Ba-da-boom. So let's see. Moving on. What do you have next?
All right. Here, I've got one. And there's a few of these. There's a super low budget film that's actually pretty popular. I mean, it made a lot of money at the box office later on. It's called Duel, and it was from 1971, and it was a Steven Spielberg movie. It's a relatively short film, not very long. And I think it was just based on a short story that was originally published in Playboy magazine by a guy named Richard Matheson. And he was the writer, and of course, Spielberg is the director. It was shot, the entire film was shot in less than 2 weeks.
Wow.
Now, some of these chase scenes that we're talking about, that we have been talking about, take months to shoot. And this entire film was shot in about 2 weeks, maybe
That's
a little bit
crazy.
Less. And again, it's very, very low budget. So don't expect a whole lot of, Hollywood glamour and glitz when you see it. But
right. The
story's pretty interesting. And again, there's not a whole lot to it. I mean, it's about a guy, a traveling salesman. His name is David Mann. And he's an electronics vendor. And he's driving this red 1970 Plymouth Valiant. And then he's on the way. He's out in these kind of back country areas. He's relentlessly pursued on in a rural California highway road by what they say is a demonic killer diesel engine truck.
I
like the way they describe that, right?
Yeah.
And the truck is actually a 1955 Peterbilt 281, which has a tanker trailer behind it. So, of course, there's this flammable cargo aspect of this whole thing. But the truck looks absolutely evil. I mean, it's all, they've got it painted kind of flat colors, browns and blacks and everything. And it's, it was chosen specifically. That truck was chosen because it looks like a face when you look at it from the front. I mean, you can see the eyes, the nose, the mouth, stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it has, it's personified, I guess, as being kind of this evil demon, right?
Oh, and Richard Matheson, that name might sound familiar to some of you because he is a horror writer. He also wrote I Am Legend, which eventually became a film a couple times. Oh, but this has nothing really to do with anything. Do you remember a film called The Omega Man?
Yes.
Yeah, that was based on I Am Legend, but they changed a whole bunch of it.
Oh, no kidding.
I Am Legend's originally about vampires, and then Omega Man just was about a weird cult. in the end of civilization.
I had no idea.
Well, there's
Omega Man. I'll have to look that up.
There's not a. I've got a copy if you want to borrow it. I don't know if Omega Man has any car chase scenes to write home about. And I guess they must not be that great because I don't remember them. But yes, Richard Matheson, prolific writer, and apparently a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, and getting back to the chase in this movie Duel, it's kind of interesting because, you know, supposedly it's like a hidden, faceless, psychopathic driver, right? But he does confront this guy I guess it'd be a roadside diner.
Yeah.
And he gets very upset with him, and, you know, there's a little bit of a fight between the two of them, and then back on the road again. Then, of course, he's back on him again. You know, it's like he's back to the chasing. And there's a lot of what they call road rage behaviors in this film. And I'll tell you, there's loud honking. That's fine. Okay, fine. Pursuit. Yes. Yeah. Blocking maneuvers during attempts to pass. Tailgating and chasing at high speeds, which is, of course, essential for our topic here.
They call that the Scott Benjamin around here, right?
Yeah, right. That's real nice, Ben. All right, so there's also car. Oh, and there's one scene where the truck is trying to push his car onto a train track as a train is passing.
Yeah,
it's a very intense scene. I mean, it's pretty shocking to see it actually happening. Attempted collisions, of course, and then there's this last scene, this last big confrontation, I guess, where he's finally had enough.
Right.
And he's gonna ram the truck, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not giving anything away because this film is 44 years old at this point. So he's gonna smash into this homicidal truck driver, right? And he's gonna send him, you know, plummeting over this cliff. Well, you know, you can watch the scene and, you know, what happens, you know, to search Duel last scene or whatever, you'll find it. But the interesting thing about this, and this comes from that trivia page again, is that the stunt driver that was driving the truck, the big semi truck.
Yeah.
He this takes a lot of guts, man. The mechanism that was designed to keep the truck moving and straight during this last scene so that it could then, you know, push this car over the hill and, you know, fall over the edge and, you know, burst into flames and everything because it's a tanker truck.
Right.
They actually did crash the car and the truck together and make them fall over. The mechanism to make that happen broke on the day of the shoot. And the stunt driver said, well, I've got something, you know, another engagement that I have to be at tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
I got to do this today. He did the scene like he was driving the truck, and at the last second, he dove out onto the edge of the cliff and kind of did like a diving roll.
Yeah.
And if you watch that last scene, when the truck goes over, the driver's door is still open from where he had just bailed out. You don't see him bail out. You know, of course, the idea is that he's in the truck still. But he did bail out himself. I mean, that was like a real stunt that he did on the day of, and it was just one take, and that's it.
That's crazy because, you know, it's so risky to try to do something in just one take.
Yeah.
And many times in a car chase, you have to because of the massive amount of bureaucracy involved, the massive expense of the cars you're destroying.
Well, I mean, think about it. This could have been the end of his life right here. I mean, if he got hung up on the steering wheel or if, you know, his boot got caught under the pedal or something, you know, that kind of thing does happen, but not very often, but it does happen. And man, I just think it took a lot of guts for him to do that in, you know, right there live, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding.
Amazing, amazing stuff. All right, so I'm flipping through some pages here, and there's one, and oh man, I don't even know if, how about this? Let's do another couple quick ones, and then I want to get back to one that is just spectacular in my mind.
All right, so let's go ahead and do it the way people do bar jokes. Stop me if you heard it before. Motorway, which is it's kind of like The Driver by Walter Hill, and it's two cops taking on a professional getaway driver. And so, as you can tell, both from the name and the plot setup, this thing is chock full of some great car chases. Then I guess we should talk. We have to mention Bond a little bit. I was checking out Quantum of Solace, and we mentioned it earlier already. The worst thing that can happen to an Aston Martin is to ever be within like 30 feet of James Bond.
Yeah, he's going to smash it.
He's going to smash it. Someone else is going to smash it. This car chase in particular is pretty cool because there are parts where you see him going through a tunnel, sacrificing the door of the car, doing all sorts of pretty hectic and dangerous, driving. Let's see, the other one. Oh, here's a foreign film I wanted to mention. Let's see what you think about this.
Okay.
This is a sequel. The Raid 2, Barrendal. It's a new film, and it's directed by somebody named Gareth Evans. This is a multi-vehicle chase, which almost all of our vehicle chases are, right? And it gives you a shot inside of the cars during the chase. And in some of the cars, there are close quarter Silat combat zone. That's an Indonesian martial art. So it's going out of the car chases into the cars to show these people, you know, fighting inside the car, and then going out to see how they're driving as well.
Pretty intense. All right, Ben, there's a few that I feel like I just need to mention, and we can spend as much or as little time on them as you like, okay? But I feel like we just need to get the names out there so that people know we've been watching these and we're interested in these, because these are cool. Smokey and the Bandit.
The
original.
Yeah.
We have to mention Smokey and the Bandit. I mean, the whole thing. I mean, it was it's a Hal Needham film, and he was, of course, a career stuntman. I mean, he's the one who directed this.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he's going to have a heavy interest in seeing stunts in the film. You know the story. I mean, it was what's the guy's name? I think Burt Reynolds' name was Bo, right, in this?
Uh-huh.
And there's the snowman, who was Randy Travis, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And Carrie was Sally Field. I'm just going off the top of my head. I think that was right. But the whole thing is so much fun because it's really what they call it is like a redneck cop comedy chase scene. The whole thing. I mean, the entire thing is a chase scene. And the entire premise of this film is that there's an $80,000 prize bet to drive an 18-wheel tractor trailer rig full of bootleg Coors beer from halfway across the United States from Georgia to Texas and then back in 28 hours flat. And you know, of course, Bo is kind of like the lookout for the tractor trailer, right? On the way. And the police are after him the whole time. It's just, it's fun. It's a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, some of the hijinks that they get into along the way, you know, some of the stuff with Jackie Gleason who plays the cop is just so funny. You know, like when they're interacting in the diner, you know, they're kind of listening to each other's conversations. It's so funny. But, one quick thing I want to mention here is that, you know, during the filming of that, a senior executive at Pontiac told Burt Reynolds that he would give him a free Trans Am, a Pontiac Trans Am, if the film became a success. And of course it was. And the 1977 Pontiac Trans Am became, like one of the hottest sellers of that year, or actually of the next 2 or 3 years, because the sales went up from something like 68,745 in 1977, which is still pretty high, went up in 1978 all the way to 93,341. And then in 1979, just 2 years later, 117,108 Pontiac Trans Ams were sold. And that's almost entirely because of, you know, the appearance of that car in that film.
You know what? That's a really great point that we should make sure to emphasize, Scott. If you are a car manufacturer, one of the best things to ever happen is to have a starring role. One of your vehicles have a starring role in the car chase, primarily being the protagonist car. That's the spot you want,
right? Of course. And you know what? I'm cutting you short but I've been really, really paying attention to this in the last maybe couple of years, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And anytime you're watching a television show or a film or whatever, you're going to notice that, hey, man, it seems like everybody's driving a Ford in this film.
Everybody is hopping into an Audi.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is that? Why is that happening? I mean, of course, it's a sponsorship. It's a product placement, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just like when, you know, someone walks into the room and there's a Pepsi can on the table, that's not there by accident. I mean, the car thing is huge. And for a car, a car manufacturer to be part of a feature film like that, especially one that features, you know, car chase scenes, you know, where the car is the star in that scene.
Yeah.
That is huge.
And there is a lot of return on it because, you know, as you were saying with the Trans Am numbers, that's far from the only example. Part of the reason that Dodge Challengers have remained so iconic, and not even to mention the Mustang itself, is because they repeatedly occur inside these different fictional worlds, and when they do occur, they're almost always presented as great cars. Even if the people who drive them are bad, they have great performance, handling, they're doing stunts.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want a car
like
that?
And you know, one perfect example is the the remake of the Italian Job with the Mini, because they brought back the same Mini, not the exact same Minis. They brought back the new Mini Coopers, for the 2003 remake. And one quick thing about that film that we didn't get to mention, you know, they brought them back in the same colors, the red, white, and blue, of course, but the updated version. Of course, this time, you know, the heist was $35 million in gold instead of, you know, the original $4 million in gold. Because, you know, in 1969, you could get by on $4 million, which now you can't. You have to have $35 million now.
I mean, that's just to get to the table.
I mean, and that was 12 years ago at this point. Can you believe that? 12 years ago? 2003?
Wow.
So anyways, they had British F1 driver Damon Hill trained all the drivers in the remake. You know, all the people that were going to be driving the mini cars. And they said that head and shoulders above everybody else. And I'll see if I can get her name right because I'm not good with actresses' names.
Uh-huh.
Charlize Theron. She was far and away the best driver of all of the stars in that film.
Charlize Theron,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, that's according to Damon Hill. He said that she just really, for whatever reason, just really took to it. And she was just the best driver that was on the set.
Huh. Well, you know, there's not a lot that she can't do.
I don't know why I didn't expect that. I mean, I just didn't. But, I mean, she really took to it. And you can, if you watch the scenes now, you can see how much fun she's having driving. And I think clearly it's something, well, maybe she should look at it as a career choice. After acting.
All right. Now, I think at this point, let's see, how many do you want to list?
Well, let me tell you, I've got two more that I would like to talk about kind of in detail.
Let's go with those.
Okay. All right. So, I'll save this one for the last one, but, let's talk about the Blues Brothers.
Ah, yes.
How about that? Okay.
Yes.
The Blues Brothers and not just the mall chase scene, because there's several car chase scenes in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And this is getting right to the heart of the ones that we talked about early on with the demolition style, you know, demolition derby style chase scenes. I'll tell you, there were 103 cars that were wrecked during the filming of the Blues Brothers.
And we're talking about the 1980 Blues Brothers.
1980. And that was a world record in 1980. But then just 2 years later, there was a film called, The Junk Man. And, there's a director coming up that, I think his name is Halicki. Is that right? H.B. Halicki?
Yeah.
The movie called The Junk Man wrecked 150 cars in 1982, which became the new world record. And then 20 years later, The Matrix Revolutions came out in 2003, and they wrecked something like 300 cars. But totally different feel to it, though. I mean, when you see it happening in The Matrix Revolutions, it's totally different from what you see and hear in The Blues Brothers. It's almost like the 103 cars in The Blues Brothers on me had more impact, you know, the way that impact, I shouldn't have said it that way, but they had more impact on me. I don't know if it was emotionally or what. I mean, it was just exciting to see it happening in the Blues Brothers. Not that the other one wasn't exciting.
Well, it seems more realistic. Again, going back to that, to the idea now that.
Well,
that,
realistic. I mean, come on. Yeah.
That car chase. Okay. But the car chase in Matrix Reloaded, is,
I'm talking about Revolutions.
Oh, Revolutions.
Revolutions.
Okay.
They wrecked 300 cars in the Revolutions. I don't know what they did in Reloaded. Probably slightly less.
But it's still, okay, maybe this is part of it, Scott. Maybe it's that it has to matter when the cars are wrecked, and the more cars that happen like that, just casually to the side, you know, the less important it becomes.
Here's the other thing. Okay, in 1980, I know that they were really smashing up those cars. I mean, I know that that was actually happening, right? You know, they were really doing it.
Yeah.
In 2003, in The Matrix Revolutions, I know they really did smash the cars, but I almost felt like I was watching something that was computer generated. I mean, I don't know why that was. I mean, it was just felt like, you know, so much of the film was CGI.
Right.
Then when you see all these cars being smashed, you're thinking like, well, maybe that some of that's not real. Maybe some of it is. Apparently a lot of it was real. The car chase stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you do get that sensation, like you're desensitized to it a bit at that point.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's the word I was looking for.
So,
desensitized.
All right, so we do have to talk just quickly about the car itself. It was a converted 1974 Dodge Monaco that the Blues Mobile.
Right. Yes.
And this is really cool, Ben. When they did the permits, so they got the proper permits. They actually did get permits from the city of Chicago to drive because. The last, half hour of the film, I guess?
Yeah.
They drive 106 miles towards downtown Chicago, being pursued by police cars the entire way. So you can imagine that the last 30 minutes is just, you know, action-packed, right?
Right.
And sometimes they reach speeds up to 120 miles per hour, which is incredible because they really were driving 120 miles per hour in downtown Chicago. They were approved through Chicago, you know, with the proper permits, for two 100-plus mile-per-hour passes underneath the elevated train in downtown Chicago. Can you imagine seeing those cars? Because when you watch that, you think, no way, they're speeding that up. It's got to be messed with in post-production.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They really are driving. I think they said they reached 118 miles per hour in that scene. They did that twice, for the take. And again, that's those steel girders.
Right.
Passing very close by. That's such a dangerous thing to do. I mean, it's an incredible stunt.
And movies are amazing, Scott. And here's something cool, too. The director, right, John Landis, he specifically said that he reshot some of those scenes with pedestrians on the sidewalk because of the same concern that, oh, people are going to think this part is fake.
Yeah.
Now, don't get us wrong, ladies and gentlemen. There's plenty of stuff about the Bluesmobile that is clearly fake, especially the part where it flips backwards in the air and flies.
Okay, you're getting to a part where I have to talk about this because this falls under the weird category,
right?
All right, there's a scene where, and I'm going to just off the top of my head again, weren't there some Nazis in a Pinto in that scene? Because they come to a part of this bridge, right? And there's this unbelievably high bridge, right? They fall off. You mentioned that the car flips backwards, right?
Yeah.
It makes it safely to the other side of the missing part of the bridge, right? The overpass. Yeah. Well, I believe the Nazis in the Pinto, they didn't fare so well. They went over the edge and, of course, were suddenly it seemed like they're 20,000 feet in the air, right?
Yes.
And they're falling, right?
Yeah.
So here's the weird part about this. So before they could film the falling Pinto scene, the filmmakers had to get what they called an air unworthiness certificate for the Pinto. So they had to practice the fall for the FAA to approve this, for them to drop a Pinto, because if you truly do drop a Pinto, what's the chance that it's going to turn into an airfoil and it's going to, veer off from its intended course? It's not going to drop like a brick, right?
Yeah.
So they had to make sure that it would do that. They had to get this air unworthiness certificate from the FAA so that they knew when they dropped it, it would drop straight down. And it, of course it did. Not particularly aerodynamic car, the Pinto. And it all worked out fine, but it was so funny how they fall off this bridge and suddenly they're again like 20,000 feet in the air. It's ridiculous. And then of course the mall chase scene. I don't know what we can say about that. That was just amazing. They rented that mall. It was already shut down for a full year when they did this, and it's an incredible scene. If you've never seen the mall chase scene from the Blues Brothers,
You can just watch it online now.
Definitely watch it. But they rented the Dixie Square Mall in Harvey, Illinois, which had been shut down. And they promised, this is funny. They said that, about a year later, I think the Universal Studios was sued for something like $87,500. Even though the mall was closed down because they said that they had failed to return the mall to its original condition, which was never agreed upon by the studios and the people. I guess there was no contract or anything like that. So, but they were sued for $87,500. And later on, that mall was torn down, like 2012, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
The mall was completely flattened. But, again, if you want to see some cars piling on top of each other, particularly, police cars, the Blues Brothers from 1980 is the one to see.
So, yeah, there are car chases in the newer one, but, I don't know about you, but for me, the original Bluesmobile and actually the original Blues Brothers movie was a little bit more fun. Not to say anything bad about John Goodman, who's
not
a great Blues Brother in his own right.
Sure.
Did you see on Saturday Night Live where they brought back the Blues Brothers just for a second?
I did. And can I say something just kind of off
the
cuff?
Yeah.
When they brought them out, remember how it used to be like there was one heavy one, one thin one?
Yeah.
They brought them out. They were both a little heavy. I mean, I'm not one to talk, but I mean, for just a quick second, I was looking thinking like, Which one's Elwood? Yeah. And I hate that I'm like that, but I mean, it was interesting to see after all these years because that was a long, long time ago.
Yeah. They held up. They held up. And I know, the Belushi brothers, I was surprised because I was expecting to be Goodman and Aykroyd, but when it came in and saw it was John Belushi's brother, I was like, wow, this is amazing.
And I don't mean to take anything away from the performance. It was pretty incredible to see them back on stage again together. That was cool. All right, so the last one that I want to cover here, Ben, unless you've got some more you'd like to pepper in here.
Oh, I want to see if we've got the same one in mind.
The final one that I want to talk about is Gone in 60 Seconds.
Ah, Gone in 60 Seconds. That's not the one I thought it would be, but this is perfect to talk about because that movie is bananas.
It is, and now I'm talking about the 1974 Gone in 60 Seconds.
The original.
The original Gone in 60 Seconds, and here's the thing about this video. Well, there's a lot of things about this video, but if you watch it on YouTube, you know how they kind of limit clips to about 10 or 12 minutes, I guess? You know,
sure.
Yeah. I don't know why that is really, but you have to watch this chase scene. It's so long. You have to watch it in like three or four parts of 12 minutes each. That's how long this one particular chase scene lasts.
Yeah.
Now, it's a 97 minute film. If you want to watch the entire thing, the last 40 minutes of it are one chase scene.
Yes.
40 minutes of this was a chase scene with one car evading the police.
93 cars were wrecked, you guys.
Incredible.
Not all of the onlookers were actors.
No, this is, there's so many things about this. Now, this is the one where the driver is the director. Okay, so the director of the film, it's a very, and believe it or not, when you watch this, you're not going to be able to guess this now, you know, looking back, but this was a low budget film. It was a very low dollar feature film that they used a lot of auction cars. So the director used the tactic of going to, you know, city auctions and buying police cars at something like, you know, an average of like $200 a piece. And he just started gathering these things for, I think it was up to a year, and he kept them on one big parking lot, you know, for his use later on. They were relatively unused. I think, you know, he had some work done to them to do whatever they needed in the film. But, you know, roughly $200 a piece is what he was spending on these cars. So the budget for the whole film was very, very low. And I got to say this, Ben. You like the Beastie Boys?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever seen their Sabotage video?
Uh-huh.
The music video?
Yeah.
Right away when you see the beginning of this chase scene where the driver is getting into Eleanor, the Mustang, you know, the yellow Mustang.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like, you know, that cheesy kind of, you know, long sideburns, big hairy mustache. It looks a lot like the Sabotage get-ups, you know, with the big glasses and everything.
Yeah.
It's so funny to see. You almost think you have a little chuckle at first, but then you realize, like, this guy's got some serious driving skills.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, in the scene, again, 40 minutes long. And the thing about this clip, this 40-minute clip, is that a bunch of the stuff that happens here is unintended. It's accidents that really happen. I mean, he hits a telephone pole at 85 miles per hour.
Right.
He sideswipes a telephone pole, injures himself horribly.
Loses consciousness.
Yeah, that's right. I think I told you this in the hallway, right?
Yeah.
One thing that, you know, after this telephone pole scene, they said as soon as he regained consciousness, he asked if we got the shot. And it's like, oh, this happens over and over and over again because this scene, this one 40-minute scene, I believe, supposedly took 7 months to film.
Which I totally believe it.
7 months. That's a long, long time. All right, so the amount of destruction that you see in this 40 minutes is just unbelievable.
It's mayhem.
It is absolute mayhem. This is where the 93 cars are crushed, you know, during this whole thing are destroyed. And we said that the star, you know, there's this one really big climactic scene, I guess, where they come back to a previous crash scene because he's all over the place in this. He comes back and there's this huge jump. I think the jump clears something like 138 feet, 128 feet.
Wow.
Is how far he jumps in this really just beat the hell Mustang. It's a Mach 1 Mustang, a 73 Ford Mach 1. Again, nicknamed Eleanor. And they said that, you know, of course he did the jump himself. And they said that after that jump, this guy never walked the same again. Like he compressed his vertebrae during the jump.
Oh.
And said that for, you know, the rest of his life, he's just never has walked right again after that.
That's rough, man.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I'll say. Again, all these auction cars that were bought. There's a couple of scenes like where there's a roadblock set up and, there's a scene where a detective, I think it's a real life detective actually, who was, you know, playing a part in this. Was nearly killed. I mean, because they hit the car with such force that, you know, the car that was part of the barricade was thrown into the actor. So there's a lot of like real, you know, real stuff happening in this that they decided to leave in because no one was killed. No one was, you know, seriously injured. They were injured.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I know the story you're talking about. You're talking about, the detective, let's see. Is he actually a detective? The guy's named J.C. Agajanian was almost killed when Halicki missed his mark in a chase, hitting an unmarked Plymouth Belvedere patrol car, sending it careening toward the guy.
And I'll tell you, this film, it will surprise you at every turn, really. I mean, you know that you kind of know what's going on, right? But then they'll suddenly be indoors at a car dealership, you know, in this chase scene. He'll smash into what at the time were a row of brand new Cadillacs. I mean,
oh,
it destroyed all of them. It's just, it's incredible the amount of destruction that happens in this 40 minute sequence. And if you have to watch it, you know, part one, two, three, four, I still say it's worth it. That's the way I did it. I watched, you know, all four parts. I didn't watch the whole film or anything like that. I have seen it in the past. Mm-hmm. But in fact, now that I'm talking about it, later today, I'm going to have to go watch it again because it really is. When you watch it with the knowledge that, you know, some of the stuff is real, some of it was intended to happen, you're watching for the real stuff. You know, after you look at the trivia for the film, maybe.
Right.
It becomes just another level of interesting to me.
Ah, yes. And speaking of interesting, now it is time to ask the question we wanted to ask you guys at the end. Having heard some of the behind-the-scenes accounts of these fictional car chases, well, excuse me, semi-fictional car chases in many points, what, in your opinion, is one of the best car chases that we didn't mention? And if you could play the part of any character in any film, right, car chase involved, what part would you want to play and why? Because here's what we didn't talk. We haven't talked about Mad Max, but don't worry. Spoiler alert, we have something like that on the way.
Yeah, there's a new Mad Max film.
Uh-huh, yeah. And so we're kind of waiting on that one. But we would really like to hear what do you think is one of the best little-known car chases, right? Any trivia or facts we have about it. And again, if we haven't said it before, we do want to thank any of the professional stunt drivers listening to this podcast because what they are doing is a craft, you know, it's a real art.
You know, I miss some of the older stuff from the 1970s, 1980s, like we said, with, you know, the demolition derby style crashes.
Yeah.
But I was watching just a real quick clip today, and I didn't even talk about this film, but there's a film called The Junkman. And one of the just like wanton destruction of cars, I guess, you know, like just additional, like it seems like it's an interesting way to do it, but it just destroyed cars just really for no good reason, I guess. And the scene is that he pushes over a sign with a Corvette, like a new Corvette, pushes over a restaurant sign onto it, and there's cars. Now picture them in a parking lot. You know, these are the 1970s, so they have this giant hoods.
Yeah.
You know, that are look like they're about an acre each, you know, in size. And they're all bumper to bumper, you know, and tight, so that it makes one big surface. So between the windshields, there's this nice big flat area. So he pushes over a sign, and in this brand new Corvette, gets up on top of the cars and drives all the way across like this row of cars on the hoods. And I mean, there must have been 30 cars destroyed in that scene. And then the police follow and they get stuck. And, you know, the people at the restaurant are left, you know, in amaze, you know, staring in amazement at their cars being destroyed. It's just, we don't get to see stuff quite like that anymore. And if there are films out there like that, it seems like they're few and far between now. I mean, it seemed like that was kind of the staple back then, you know, that was the car chase scene, is you would destroy 100 cars at a time. We don't get to quite see that anymore. And I know I mentioned The Matrix, what was it, Revolutions, or which one was it? I can't remember. But 300 cars destroyed in that one. But not quite the same fashion as we saw back in the 1970s, 1980s.
There's something just a little more visceral and real about the older car chases.
I don't know what it is, Ben. I don't know if it's like the V8 sounds, if it was like the real steel cars instead of, you know, like the, a lot of plastic bits being torn off and stuff like that. And then it's also maybe that, you know, in modern chase scenes, it's often, you know, covered up with a lot of music. You know, there's a lot of like real hard driving music and maybe some yelling and some screaming between the people, but you don't get to hear the engine noises. It's not as visceral, I guess, as was the chase scene in Bullet.
And it's not, there's something about that lack of polish in some of these things that makes it seem more like a real chase. Like, here's just one example I'll walk out on, right?
Okay.
There was this director named Umberto Lenzi, and he was screening a movie he had called Rome Armed to the Teeth from 1976. And he says that some of the sirens you can hear during this chase scene, an ambulance is hijacked. He said some of the sirens that you can hear in this hijacking scene are not ambulance sirens. And, you know, you can tell the difference between ambulance and police sirens, but sirens from actual law enforcement who are chasing the vehicles.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So that's what often.
Wow.
Because they often shot some of these things without official permission. So, of course, the police think they're stopping grand theft.
And sure, as we heard many times, you know, they sometimes they're operating right on the edge of the law, you know, I mean, or completely on the other side, you know, where they're not allowed to be shooting in a certain city, a certain location, at certain speeds. You know, it's gotta be tricky for, you know, directors to pull something like that off when you don't have the proper permits and you're still worried about hurting somebody because that could be the end of your career. It could be the end of the studio that you're working
for. Yeah.
So, man, what a risky business to be in. And I mean, in all aspects, really.
We hope you enjoyed this. We hope that you write back to us with some answers to those questions. Who would you most like to be in a car chase in any film? What is something we missed that other listeners need to know about? And do you have any ideas for something we should cover in upcoming episodes? You can find us on Facebook, Twitter. We're carstuffshow.com, and you can write to us directly. We are
CarStuff at HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.